Good evening. Last week, The Tomorrow Show featured the subject of bullying. During that broadcast, it came to our attention that staffer Katie Campbell, often referred to as Pantene Katie, felt attacked by the words of a guest earlier in the week. As internal measures were taken to help Katie cope with this extremely difficult time, a bystander to the act stood by. It did nothing when the act occurred. Fortunately, we are living in an enlightened age where we know better, that a bystander to bullying is in fact worse than the bully. Fellow staffer Ian Kaiser, sometimes referred to as Ian Kaiser Sose, was that very bystander. As a result, The Tomorrow Show has suspended Mr. Kaiser until further notice. We apologize to Pantene Katie and to all the many victims of bullying and bystanding. If you know a bystander to bullying, like Ian Kaiser, we'd like to know. Tweet or email us at info@thetomorrowshow.com. In the meantime, we apologize again for these tragic events and hope you can enjoy tonight's show.
New media, the final frontier. These are the broadcasts of The Tomorrow Show. Its mission, to befriend fellow nocturnals, escapists, and dreamers. Not to mention angry loners, the socially inept, and those with Peter Pan syndrome. To boldly go where no broadcast has gone before. The Tomorrow Show with Kevin Undergaro. Your overnight broadcast featuring one celebrity boyfriend's midlife crisis, millennials in Star Trek costumes, and so much more. The underdog's best friend. And all you need is a smartphone or access to the internet. Here's the captain of your tomorrow, Kevin Undergaro!
I know what this is! What is this, Roxy? What do you think?
I don't know. It might be a little too...
Any idea yet?
I think it's from a movie I watched this weekend.
Laura Magrasso, what is this?
It's a Revenge of the Nerds theme song.
That's right, it is. Because tonight we are going to teach a millennial to view Revenge of the Nerds, classic movie from 1984. Before we get into tonight's show, I have a matzo ball with me, Roxanne Stryer.
Hi, Kev. How you doing?
I'm still concerned about the bullying and the bystanding that went on. And we'll break it down.
Oh, yeah, we have to.
We have to break it down.
But I have no one next to me now, so
well,
it was very serious.
You know why.
Yeah,
because we take bystanding very serious here.
Breaking news. There is a bystander in the Snapchat, the chat roll.
Oh, no.
He says you can suspend him from the show, but not from the chat role. So classic bystander behavior.
Oh,
really,
my God. So now, okay, will you please, Lauren, will you please police Ian Kaiser in the chat room? Make sure he's not bullying anyone. And if someone's being bullied, please, I need to know if he's a bystander.
Absolutely.
So we can talk to Tomorrow Show Human Resources about this. I guess they didn't think far enough ahead about the chat room.
I actually think we could suspend somebody from the chat role if they were bystanding enough.
Well, Lauren?
How do you determine what's enough?
Well, but just by... I mean, he hasn't said anything recently, so I would qualify that as bystanding.
Interesting. All right. Who else is in the booth?
It's Jared Gilkerson.
No, it's Jared at 32.
Jared at 32 at Gilkerson Radio.
Nice. Okay, we got the shameless plug-in. Christian Blatt.
Blattcast.com if we're plugging.
Yeah, plug away. I'm still reeling from Thursday. I can't, you know, I learned so much about you guys. The millennials entertained me, you informed me so much on bullying.
Yeah.
Really, thank you so much.
We learned all about it in school, Kev.
I know. I guess it was lost on me. Jared, did you learn anything?
I learned a lot of things, Kevin. A lot of things from Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, wait, now I'm talking about bullying.
Oh, bullying, well... No, I learned nothing because I'm going to continue bullying.
Fucking Chad.
fucking Jared. Ooh.
Where is Pantene Katie, the founder of the feast, as it were?
I'm right here.
How are you feeling? I guess that's most important.
I'm feeling okay. I really like that we talked about the bullying situation. It makes me feel good as a millennial.
Right. You feel like you're being heard?
I do, and that's what we want.
That's it. I mean, I guess because you know there's nothing. I know you're looking at me, Lauren, like you give me that look, but there's nothing more important than you, than a millennial.
M-I-L-L-E-N-N-I-A-L
spells millennial.
That's me.
That's it. Right? Love you guys.
Wow, I can't believe we learned to spell it. It's a big week.
Anyway, we do. We are going to talk. I'm so excited to talk Revenge of the Nerds. And then guest curveball is that we are going to have the writer of the Revenge of the Nerds movie Skyping in. So I guess, God, there's so many things we want to go over, but initial thoughts on Revenge of the Nerds. I'll start with you, Roxy.
Yeah.
Be honest. Because you guys already hated the first movie you guys got.
No. This is my straight up honest opinion, whether Steve is listening or not. I think this movie was fun. I enjoyed it more than High Noon, although I think they're in slightly different categories.
They are.
But as a woman, it affected me poorly a little bit. It was slightly rapey, to say the least. And by rapey, I mean literally somebody got raped in it and it was not acknowledged.
Okay.
Also, I will stand up for the bullies here. You've been looking for somebody to stand up for the bullies.
Yep.
I am a bully advocate in this situation, Kevin, because the bullies were not as big of bullies as the nerds were.
Wow. Oh, my God. Times have changed. Okay. Let's go to the booth. Lauren.
Yes.
What did you think of Revenge of the Nerds?
I thought it was really fun. I have to agree with Roxy that the camera thing was a little much for me. I got a little Aaron Andrews situation going on, and it felt weird. But I thought it was really fun. And I did like the ending where everyone felt like the underdog, and they all went together and were nerds together. I thought that was nice. But, yeah, there was definitely some sexism and racism happening. But it was all for all fun. If you can overlook that.
Oh, my God. Now, I can't even imagine what Pantene Katie has to say. Pantene Katie, who was bullied when Russell Simmons was in by Russell's words.
Right.
And then Ian was a bystander to it, so then she was affected by that. We reopened the wound tonight, and I'm sorry, Pantene Katie, but we had to acknowledge it for our fans.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me, how did this trouble you?
You know, I actually watched the movie and enjoyed it. I thought it was funny, and I didn't really get the whole women and the rape and the sexism thing.
Interesting.
I didn't. I didn't think about that, but, you know, after it was brought to my attention, it's kind of interesting to look at it that way, too. But my initial thought was that it was fun. I don't know if fraternities and sororities are necessarily like that. Were they in the 80s?
It was very divisive.
Oh.
Christian, Vlad, speak to this. Help somebody.
Yeah, I was actually talking a little bit about this beforehand. So I started college in 1994, and I expected that this is exactly what college was like. My first day of college, I'm like, it's probably going to be like Revenge of the Nerds, you know? Because believe it or not, as suave and sophisticated as I come off, while I was not a nerd, I was not cool. So I was like, all right, I could identify with the nerds when I saw this movie as a kid. And I'm like, this is what it's going to be like. I had no interest in joining a fraternity. And I, you know people who have been parts of fraternities. But I was just like, no, I am not going to be an alpha beta. I don't want any part of that. I don't want to be a lambda, lambda, lambda either.
Alpha, beta. Ooh. Ah. Okay. But would you say that it was... I mean, somewhat more accurate than today. Today, it's very gray. But back then, I felt it was jock or nerd.
Yeah, I think that's very accurate. I mean, you know,
You had some Switzerland. You had your stoners.
Yeah.
You had those people that could kind of, you know,
neutral. Sort of, yeah, they would be in both camps, really, you know, friends with everybody. But yeah, I mean, it was a pretty firm line in the sand in the 80s and throughout 80s movies, really, like of the jocks versus whether it's
think that was high school back then, and that's what it was like. You know, that Katie, like, that was the world I grew up in was.
I think the millennials can't even imagine a time when being a nerd and liking nerd things wasn't cool. because, you know, now it's like, oh, everybody – well, first of all, everybody has a computer. Just having a computer was something we were supposed to laugh at them for.
No!
Right, exactly. And, you know, I mean, now it's like, well, every other movie is a superhero movie or a science fiction movie. So nerd culture is fairly dominant these days. So this is – it speaks to your point that the bullies are getting forgotten about in this day and age.
Okay, Jared at 32. So you – Jared 32, did you live in a world where it was just gray, or did you have your heroes and villains in college and high school?
It was a bit muddled. It was definitely a bit muddled. It wasn't so black and white like in this movie. Like there were all kinds of groups.
When'd you get out of college?
2006.
Yeah, it changed by then. Yeah, for me, it was pretty accurate. That's how it was.
Do you feel like, Kevin, it's held up for you? Like you feel the same emotions watching it today as you did?
Yes, because it's an underdog story. So, and I think you guys missed, I mean, there were certain parts in this, which I'd love to talk to Steve about. I mean, and I'd love to get Ian Kaiser Sose. Too bad he is suspended for being a bystander to bullying. But you being a matzo ball, when you see the effigy that was burned on the lawn, what did it say? Like something nerds?
It just said nerds.
Nerds. Yeah, just to be in flames on their lawn was very much, to me, like burning crosses and things like that on people's lawns. You know, I think that's what they were going for. And it was, and they even said nerd persecution. And they were persecuted. So I guess, but you guys saw it the other way. Saw that...
Well, Kev, I think that it's one thing to burn a word on somebody's lawn and like
it's very traumatizing.
Very traumatizing to disrespect their house, to vandalize, to drive up with pigs, all of that.
No, and ruin their party.
And ruin the party.
Right.
Yep, all of that is absolutely cruel. However, then you take the rebuttal from the nerds. They take pictures of the girls naked and put them on the bottom of pies to give out to everybody.
Okay, now wait a second. Now, here's what I'm wondering about, Roxy. Is it because they were taking pictures of girls like you? It was the hot girls who, you know, let's just say were not the most sensitive to the other people in the school. So are you taking up for them?
If
it was the Omega Moos, I would have felt terrible. But it wasn't.
Oh, I would feel bad either way. I would feel equally as bad because whether you're hot or not, it doesn't mean that your privacy should be invaded. And these girls were bitchy, absolutely.
They had one coming?
Yes, one coming. As in, like, they should have, I don't know, made them pee their pants while they were sleeping. But to show their naked bodies without their consent, to rape them, have sex with them, pretending to be another guy.
Well, that was later.
Which is not consensual.
And that was an isolated incident.
Right, but not consensual sex.
It was.
only Lewis is a rapist. Rest of the guys
By the way, and then they fell in love. And if you watch all, you guys, I don't want to spoil it, but if you watch the other movies, you find out that, you know, this is the, I mean, spoiler alert, I will say it, they get married.
But the message of this movie is if you rape a girl and don't tell her who you are and have unconsensual
sex, baby doll.
Then it's still cool as long as you're good enough that she likes it. Like, are you fucking kidding me? If this came out today, Kevin, imagine what would happen.
Well, again, because M-I-
Double L-E-
N-N-I-A-L spells millennial.
That's me.
It's a different world. I mean, you know, this is, we saw what the terrible, terrible, abusive and cruel attacks that took place last Thursday on our own show and Ian being a bystander. So I'm learning.
Ian.
Freaking Ian. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't know. It's at times like this where I just say, like, I don't know. I don't know how much longer I want to be here. It's just a different world.
It was fun, Kevin. The movie was certainly fun. But when you break it down, I know you have to agree that that's fucked up.
Can't you enjoy both parts? I mean, I'm not that you enjoy the rape, but can't you see, like, it's a fun movie and it also has parts of it that are outdated in that way?
That's how I feel.
I still enjoyed it. I think it's worth seeing, but I can view that and say, okay.
But isn't it amazing that that just came out and it was no big, you know,
nothing.
No one questioned it ever.
Yeah.
But the times have changed. And as you said, our generation is so about being colorblind and being open to different, you know, sexualities and everything. So, of course, we're going to view it through that lens, but I still see that it's a fun, good thing.
These guys, okay, but these were guys that were terrorized their whole lives. Everyone was so cruel to them. How guys like this, I look back in high school and I think of the people who endured that. I don't know how they didn't kill themselves.
Kevin,
I don't know how they survived
that.
How
do you not
that.
Kill yourself if somebody's watching you get naked every day, puts out your body, and then has sex with you by pretending to be your boyfriend? That's when you kill yourself.
The sex was good, though, and she liked it, remember?
It was not consensual.
But then, but she liked it, though. But she liked it.
Do you hear yourself?
What?
But she liked it.
She did.
Uh-huh.
I didn't say she wanted it. She liked it.
Mm-hmm. I think that defense holds up in court very well.
I'm just, like I said, I'm puzzled. So far, I'm 0 for 2 with my
teaching.
I'm not teaching my millennials to watch.
Well, and we haven't even talked about the racism or the broad homosexual stereotypes in the movie. We haven't even touched
Lamar Luttrell? Why?
Yeah, the fact that they invented a javelin that worked with his limp wrist and throwing style. Which is hysterical, but obviously you can't even put that joke in a first draft of a comedy this day and age.
No. And you're right, the racism too, which isn't something.
Yeah. Where was the racism?
At the end of the movie, it's like, hold on a minute. And all the black guys stand up at the end of the stage like, all right, now we're scared.
Yeah, now they're cool.
Yeah.
And by the way, wouldn't they? Why wouldn't you be scared?
Exactly.
They were huge. Yeah, but not because they were black. They were ginormous. And guess what? They had their share of hazing their whole lives. And you know what? Like, no, you put your stick in the cage and now you pay.
I mean, the same jokes in Back to the Future. You know, it's Biff is going to kick George McFly's ass. And then all of a sudden the four black guys get out of the limo and he's like, hey, I don't want any part of this. So, you know, that's 85. This was 84. So this was a time where that joke worked.
Yeah, everybody picks their qualms.
I don't know. Was that a joke? I thought it was part of the plot where I felt like the Trilams were underdogs. Because they
Definitely.
Were minorities, because they were outcasts as well. And then finally, UN Jefferson, who ran the Trilams, was like, you know what? When they got high and stuff, he's like, you know what? What is the difference between these guys and us? And, you know, he's like, I think you guys would be a fine addition. And it took other underdogs and minorities, so to speak, to accept them. So I didn't look at that as a joke. I looked at it as that they had common ground. And then when it came when they needed backup from their brothers, I thought it superseded race. I thought the race statement was great, actually, that, you know, that they didn't see color either side, the nerds or the lambdas. And they came together and backed each other up against a giant football team.
The Lambdas tried to initially not let these guys have a house, but they have something in their whatever their thing
right.
is.
Right, initially.
In their charter,
initially,
yeah.
In their right. charter.
And but then when they see their party, which if the jock fraternity saw that party, they wouldn't see that party as a success, them getting high with the Omega Moos. But you know what? Ewan Jefferson, he sees that, and he sees the fact that they're willing to stand up for themselves in their own creative way, you know, burning the jocks with their jock straps. He's like, you know, and I think you guys would be a fine addition. It was great. I don't know. I it's sad. I'm just left behind.
I also think if this movie was made just a few years later, there wouldn't have been as much drug humor. You know, this is sort of like a carryover from the 70s, because by the mid-80s, it was very, you know, just say no. Drugs were not as fun as they were in this movie. So I found it refreshing. I enjoyed the, oh, this party sucks. I know how to fix it. Which I think that's a universal message we can all take away. Make your party better with super huge joints.
I was kind of confused, though, because wouldn't the president of the entire, like, Trilam not be okay with them smoking pot and drinking and having a party?
Well, that plays into a racial stereotype as well, actually.
That he just was chill with it?
Yeah, because they're black, they're okay with getting high at a party. That's a joke.
Yeah. That was weird for me.
Not a funny one to write, but...
I'm looking around the studio, guys, and I need to build... some kind of wall.
Sounds like Trump.
Some kind of wall. No, not to keep people out. No, one that I can run into. That I can physically throw myself into. Because that's what I want to do right now.
Would you like to have Joe throw you in a beanbag again?
Yeah, like no, the beanbag was too soft. Okay. No, I need to be slammed. I just want to be slammed out of my misery. I don't know.
That's what Thursdays are for. Alcohol is the wall.
You know what? I know. God, I guess I have to drink more. But I don't know. I saw this as like the ultimate underdog movie, and I thought, and obviously it was very funny. And
you really think that they're the underdogs, though?
Yeah. They were, Rocks, they had to sleep in the gym. The rest of the campus is partying and having fun. They have no friends. And then
they were all friends with each other. They had a bajillion friends.
No. They had to build that.
Yeah, but they build that, and then they say, fuck you, society.
Which was
awesome. You guys were mean to us, so now we're just going to do all of these things that are way worse than what you did. You brought pigs to our party, so we're going to take your girlfriends and rape them. That is what happened.
As I said, an isolated incident.
That's true.
Lewis is the only one who rapes anybody.
That's true, and he's by far and away the meanest character.
Now,
Booger would never rape somebody.
Had Betty not fallen in love with him, I would say you would have a case. We could have brought charges in 2, 3, or 4, but that didn't happen. They fell in love. It's just one of those things.
When we saw her reaction when she sees his face and she's like, oh, I like you. Can we meet later? I thought that was going to be a dream sequence in his mind and that we were actually going to see her reaction of her slapping him. Because in what world would this actually happen where you thought you were having sex with one person and it was another guy and you were like, that was amazing. Like, go fucking suck a dick. That could never, ever happen.
Katie.
Yes.
Katie, I feel like I'm being bullied.
Oh, no.
That's a good point, Kevin.
Mm. And I see a lot of bystanders here, Laura DeGrasso.
I was just observing.
Yeah.
It's the same fucking thing, Laura.
Wait, is an observer a bystander?
I don't know.
What are the rules?
Yeah, it seems like that.
Oh, my goodness.
We're all just as guilty as Roxy.
I guess I'm just kind of speechless over this. Maybe it's because...
Well, let me just ask. Please. Did anybody who saw it for the first time, or maybe the first time in a while, did you think it was funny at all?
Yes.
See, because I think that's getting lost in the conversation. We're getting bogged down by a few incidents because it holds up on a lot of levels. It's still very funny. And yes, when you break it, you know, and this is the kind of movie you shouldn't break down too much.
Right.
Because it is Revenge of the Nerds.
I actually look at this one, Christian, on that note, as a success. Like, High Noon, I don't want to watch again. Revenge of the Nerd, I was like, that was funny and I want to watch it again. Other than the fact that my moral compass is way
I'm
off
for
when
two.
I'm watching. I don't think so.
But even at the end where he says, you know, he gives a speech, I know when you went to school here, you were probably known as a geek or a spaz, and they cut to different shots of people who
I love
were.
That.
And then it's just like, you know, and in comes the song by Queen.
Yeah.
We Are the Champions. And everyone comes in, you know.
Yeah. Kevin, I think you're 1-1.
I don't think so.
No, you are, Kev.
I'm over 2 on the. No, it's okay. I don't need the mercy thing.
It's not a mercy
thing. Don't worry, millennials. I'm not going to bring you to human resources. I am not going to have you suspended. Okay? I'm old school enough where, you know what? God, it's an unbelievable world we're living in now.
Can you give Jared a moment to explain to you why he feels like Ogre is the nicest character in the whole movie? I think it's a point well worth hearing.
Well, I do want to hear this.
Well, I believe after watching it last night and thoroughly looking into the matter, Ogre is your nicest character. What's the meanest thing he does? Very beginning of the movie, drops a guy from the roof. But if you look at everyone's crimes or pranks, he has the lightest. He has a girl on each arm. He chugs beer, spits beer around. He doesn't send nude pictures out of girls. He doesn't install cameras.
He's humiliated.
He doesn't
Winter Carnival. All of the things that he should be good at.
Nicest guy.
He's embarrassed. Yeah.
Yes, he's like all shucks kind of guy, but deep down you know he's just an easy guy to get along with. Ogre is the nicest guy in this movie, and he's
I was so scared of Ogre when I saw this. I was terrified.
I was afraid that Ogre was going to be at my college.
Oh, by the way, I knew so many ogres. you grew up in such a... like, but I don't think you grew up in a better world because of it. Because I think life is hard. And I think that you guys, and I see it every day, and unfortunately it spills over to my generation what little you've been through and how much your parents have a helicopter protected you and how much, I guess, censorship has protected you. That you never, I guess one of the reasons why you don't see this is because you didn't have ogres and you didn't have those people. And we all did.
Ogre just looked like a nerd to me, though, Kev.
Oh, my God. It's like, I mean, I used to see guys, Winchester High School, I used to see guys like that coming down the hallway. I'd be like, oh, fuck. You just jump into a men's room, hide, pretend you're opening a locker that wasn't yours because you just knew you were going to get your books dumped. Oh. You were going to get things thrown at you. You were going to get, like, knocked down. But I think that life is hard no matter what. That's my bigger statement. And no matter how protected you guys and how much your parents have all protected you and the schools have protected you and all that stuff, at some point you're going to have to fight. And I wish I knew a way around that, but I don't. And that's why I see you guys constantly, you know, your legs buckling under pressure so much. And you guys so much think everything's the end of the world because you haven't been through it. Do we have Mr. Zacharias on the phone, the writer of this classic film? Steve Zacharias. I'm a huge fan. This is literally one of my favorite films, if not my favorite. I am so honored to be speaking to you right now. But I'm trapped with millennials who are just have a very different take on this movie because I don't think they had the experiences we did.
Let's hope not.
Well, you're right. But these were based on your experiences, some of them, growing up.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. The Revenge of the Nerds was my best experience in show business. I was a writer for 35 years, and that was my best experience. It was like we wrote the script, and then the casting was fantastic. The lady who did Airplane cast it, and she's like amazing. And we were very, you know, I loved Risky Business, and Curtis Armstrong was brilliant in that. Mm-hmm. And I said, if we get him as Booger, we got a hit.
Can we go back to the writing process, though? What gave you the idea? And tell me about how the writing of it and how it all came together.
All right. Well, first of all, I wrote with my partner, Jeff Buhai, mm-hmm. Who we grew up together in Highland Park, Illinois. And we wrote a script before called Inside the Enquirer, which was we worked with an editor from the Enquirer magazine about the different stories that go on behind the scenes on the stories in the Enquirer. And then all of a sudden there was we got called in by David Obst and Peter Bart.
Okay. Peter Bart, yeah.
And yeah, Peter ended up running the Variety.
Yeah, he's a monster.
And David was amazing. David was the agent for Woodward and Bernstein during Watergate and 18 other journalists during Watergate, including Seymour Hersh.
So you went into pitch the Inside the Enquirer to them?
No, we went to meet with them because there was an article in the LA West magazine called Revenge of the Nerds. And it was a story about a bunch of kids out at Cal State Northridge who were dabbling with computers. And computers were very new then. No one, you know, everyone thought computers were entire buildings, you know, the size of an entire building. And these were the first kids that were fooling around with smaller computers. And so they wanted to make a movie out of it, and they were looking for someone who wrote sophomoric humor sophisticatedly, and that's what we did in Inside the Enquirer, and they liked it, and so then they hired us to write Revenge of the Nerds.
And did you take that one line, Revenge of the Nerds, and start fresh there, you know, from...
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. We started right from that. I mean, I was very excited because I'd been writing like ridiculous TV comedy. I did a show called Quark, which was about a garbage ship in outer space, and a pilot called Scalpels for NBC, and just, you know, the most ridiculous things I could think of. When Things Were Rotten, for which was a Mel Brooks television show. Mm-hmm. And so Revenge of the Nerds was just perfect for me to, you know, for it was campy and ridiculous, and yet there was a point to it. And I like to think that we created the nerd race. And, you know, before that, the only thing with Nerd was
Happy Days.
Dr. Zeus said the word, I guess, in one of his books. But it wasn't used as a computer nerd. And then Happy Days used the Nerd also. But I don't believe it had to do with computers either. So we kind of feel like we styled the entire Nerd race and the pecking order.
How do we stop them now? I feel like it's out of control.
Yeah, yeah.
you're Dr. Frankenstein. We have to. Everyone, like you. No, there's so much I want to go over. But there's obviously tons of comedy, and to me, it still holds up and it's very funny. But were you? What about the dramatic sense of it? Was there any meaning to any of that to you, or is it just like more about the comedy?
No, it was about being persecuted. You know, I mean, I was a jock when I was in high school, and there were a lot of nerdy kids, and they were disregarded, even though they were brilliant and sweet and wonderful, and the jocks were the gods of the school, and it was an obvious phenomena that we tapped into. And it's really grown into the anti-bullying and it's become a phenomenon.
You mentioned the word persecution, and it's funny because I had all the millennials on our show watch it, and they're all about bully. I mean, everybody. You can't even look at these guys wrong without being labeled a bully yourself, and yet they didn't feel any of it. You know, maybe you should speak to it, Roxy.
Here's the thing.
You have very strong opinions.
I feel as if the bullies were bullied harder than the nerds were. So we've got two columns here. Say you've got column A and column B, and you don't know what's going on in these people's lives. All you know are the facts. In column A, we have a group of people who had something burned on their lawn, they had their house vandalized, they've been shouted names at, they had pigs brought over. And in group B, we have a group of people who were taped unwillingly and unknowingly, were taking pictures of their nude bodies, were shown in the pies, and what I would think would be considered rape, were having somebody had sex with them and didn't let them know who it was, so it was not consensual. If you take those two columns, A and B, who would you say the people being more bullied are? The people in column A or the people in column B?
Well, that was the revenge of the nerds. I mean, the nerds got a stronger revenge on the jocks and the sorority girls than they did. But I agree with you. I mean, that was rape. And that was, and it was, I mean, I would never do the movie like that now.
Yeah, do you think it was?
What I would do now is I would have Lewis teach her how to do trigonometry, and then she falls in love with them, and then they can make love.
but you probably didn't think of it that at the time that it
as
a viewer, I didn't think that either back then.
Right. There was a different sensibility, and there wasn't a sensibility. Let's put it like that. It was, it's over time it's become a bad thing to do, and I would never do it again. And also the videoing was terrible too. And you had that lady who was the sports reporter who had the guy was videoing
going Aaron through Andrews.
Through her window at the hotel,
maybe he was a nerd.
So, I don't know about that, but it wasn't a good idea to introduce, a lot of times media does stuff like that. They introduce terrible concepts. Rod Serling did that
Twilight Zone
thing where there was a bomb that was going to go off in an airplane, it puts thoughts into people's minds and it wasn't good.
In terms of
this movie holding up, then you're saying you wouldn't do things the exact same way. So do you feel like you almost put this in the media and that's something that you wish you hadn't? Or do you just think it was a different time, so it just kind of goes that way?
Well, I would just say if I knew now what I knew then, I wouldn't have done that.
Right.
Hmm. It's interesting.
I'm just, it's interesting though, the way that
I mean, I would have done something. I would have had them get revenge. You know, I mean, it was fine. They put, you know, the heat on the jockstraps.
Yeah, that was funny. That's good revenge.
I do, but see, these guys, we were talking earlier, Steve, before we brought you on, and they didn't grow up in a world where we had jocks picking on nerds. I grew up in that world. You know, I knew an ogre. I knew a Stan. We knew all these guys, you know, but back in the 80s. But, you know, by the 90s, unfortunately, they were all taken out. You know, it's all been with the helicopter parenting, I feel. So I never thought.
Well, I don't know where it came from, but you know, I'm a teacher at Columbia College in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and it's just very open. It's just a very free environment. I don't see any bullying. I don't see, you know, it's okay to be gay. It's okay to do whatever you want to do. You know, and it's just the kids there are just very open. And it wasn't like that then. It wasn't like that in the 50s, in the high schools with the athletic environment and the college environment, so things have changed.
It's changed.
I was watching an interview where I think you called your son a nerd, and I was curious because you seemed excited about that. Do you think it's almost easier nowadays to grow up as a nerd than it is as a jock or any of these other terms?
I think it's okay now. Yeah, but there still is bullying. There still is bullying. In fact, I'm working on a bullying project with James Gasby, and we're doing a play that's an anti-bullying play using the MMA fighting as a part of it, and he's like kind of an expert on bullying, and it's out there. It's still out there. It's still, you know, there's a lot of bullying going on, to a certain extent, I think it's worse than when I was a kid. You know. And when I was a kid, they just kind of made fun. Now they had physical stuff, and, you know, it really can be awful.
It seems like a fine line, though. Do you sometimes, as a writer, just sit there and think, like, gosh, I wish people could take a joke better? Because I don't mean that seriously. I don't mean to show...
No. No, I don't. I take it seriously. I think we were on the right side of everything except for those two moments, you know, with the video and the rape scene. There was like zero consciousness about that until recently.
Until recently.
I was watching Bill Maher and Seth Rogen was on, and he brought it up. He said Revenge of the Nerds was his favorite movie. And then all of a sudden there was this rape scene in it, and it didn't bother him, you know, when he was a kid or whatever. But now recently, you know, with Bill Cosby, and that's what they were talking about at the time.
Wow.
It really wasn't right. And, I agree with it, but there wasn't really a consciousness of it then. You know, there just wasn't a conscious.
It was a different. It definitely was a different time. I know that. I think it was Harvey Weinstein was trying to reboot this. Do you think it ever gets rebooted, the Revenge of the Nerds franchise?
Well, you know, a lot of people have. I mean, they've shot it. They shot it at Emory College. They spent $12 million, and the president of Emory College found out how raunchy it was and shut it down. So they try everyone. So I'm working on a couple of them myself.
Yeah. Would they get you back involved? How does that work? Do you just write one on spec and then see if you can sell it? Or, you know, because you probably don't have the rights at this point.
No, you have to go through Fox and everything. But there's different things that could be done with it that haven't been done. There's never been a musical. You know,
interesting.
There's all kinds of stuff that could be done with it. Now, and then... There's different types of remakes and stuff that could be done.
How does it look today, though? I mean, again, it probably wouldn't be so black and white, I think, right? I mean, it's because it's a different world.
Yeah, well, you know, I love the Silicon Valley TV show.
I do too.
I mean that's what it is today, you know. So I would probably take a different approach on that.
But there's almost nerd on nerd crime now in that show. You notice with, you know, their biggest adversaries are bigger nerds
exactly.
on that show.
There's intra nerd fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you stay in touch with the staff? The cast?
I'm sorry, what?
Do you stay in touch with the cast from Revenge of the Nerds?
Not really. I mean, I did for a while. But, well, you know, we made 3 and 4, and then we hung out a little then. And
I watched, you know, everyone.
And we weren't involved with 2, and it actually got ruined. One of the things I wanted to go back to is on the first one, you know, there was a very fine line, and maybe this is what you were talking about, as to whether it was mean-spirited or not. And one of my favorite things was walking out of the premiere. I saw Buck Henry and Warren Beatty walking out, and they were arguing about whether it was mean-spirited.
Come on.
No. And so that's what I think made it good, was there was a fine line. There was
a
fine line, and that nerds could be bad, you know.
Oh, loose, so right? so when you say mean-spirited,
is cereal.
Do you think that they were, at that time, they were arguing that the nerds were mean-spirited or the jocks were too mean-spirited? Warren Beatty and Buck.
The whole movie, whether it was mean-spirited or not.
Wow.
You know, and it was on that border. It was really on that border, and I think that's what made it good.
Why didn't you write number 2?
We didn't write number 2 because our partner gossiped about the producer's sex life, and we weren't invited to write number 2.
Bully.
What's that?
It's a bully.
He was a bully.
Bully move.
but, you know, it's sad because I felt that number 2 missed the mark, and, you know, where...
I did too. It was the second most anticipated film of the summer, and it was a big bomb. It went out at $25 million in 3 weeks, and it was supposed to be a huge hit.
So disheartening. What would you have done? What would you have done with number 2 with a sequel back then?
You know, I don't know, but I think it would have had some meaning to it. You know, it wouldn't have just been dribble.
Do you agree on sending them on?
There would have been some point to it.
Do you think sending them on spring break, would that have been?
Yeah, maybe that could have been it, but I'm not sure. I didn't like what they did at all.
You're right. Well, I think you hit the mark. It was just more comedy and raunch rather than yours had heart, I felt. Even though my staff disagrees with me, maybe.
No, I thought that did have heart at some point.
But I feel like if you're right, if it had, it had, it didn't have heart.
Yeah, I mean, what we thought of was we treated the nerds as a persecuted race. So we saw it as, you know, the blacks in the South or the Jews in Germany that's why there was, you know, they were burning stuff.
But burning the effigy. See, that's what I'm trying to, these guys, but this went over my kid's head. I just tried to explain that to them.
Yeah, well, they don't
them.
Know about with the Jews in Germany.
Yeah, you would think.
Or the blacks in the South. So
went through.
There's no video games that show that.
You said that you felt like you guys were on the right side of everything except for those 2 scenes. Have you gotten any, I guess now current day, comments about it being racist at times or a little homophobic with your character? Or is that not something that people have really mentioned?
Not really. Not really. I mean, almost the opposite, that it was not homophobic. That was kind of interesting too. The studio didn't want a stereotypical gay character, but it was okay if it was black.
If the character was black?
Yeah.
The studio said it was okay.
You guys didn't have to fight for that at all. They just said, okay, that's fine.
They liked that better.
Mm. Wow.
Did they say why?
No.
I wanted to know too about the gay character, because there's parts in the movie where they say that the lambdas accept anyone of any race, any creed, and then he chimes in, you know, any sexual orientation, and even the nerds look at him like he's crazy. And then there's also the aspect of he's almost looked at, in my mind, in this movie, which I think's hilarious, but there are aspects of him looking kind of like a pedophile in the movie. He's constantly hanging out with that 12-year-old kid.
I thought he looked like he was the big brother and the responsible one who didn't want the kid staying up at night and partying.
And exercising with him half naked in the living room. You know.
In underoos.
That was the director's fault.
Yeah, blame it on him.
Isn't it incredible?
We wrote in no scene where the two of them are exercising in front of a television.
Yeah.
Isn't it incredible, though, Steve, the way these kids view it from the way this was viewed 20 or 30 years ago? I'm blown away right now. You're probably not, because you teach every day, so you deal with this every day. I'm just
well,
shocked.
I really don't, because, you know, I have no idea why, but it's never on iTunes. It's not on Google Play. So the kids today haven't really even seen it, a lot of them.
We found it on HBO Go, so that's a victory.
That's new. That's new because I started complaining and they started showing it on HBO Go. It's only about 6 months old.
Do you have a relationship with people at Fox?
No. No.
Okay.
I just wanted to jump in because you early on you started talking about the casting, and it's funny because you watch it and it's just amazing who's in this. You know, Anthony Edwards, and it's such a small part, but John Goodman's fantastic.
Yeah.
Timothy Busfield, very good.
When the director, by the way, was fantastic, Jeff Canoe. He really made the movie great. I mean, he really got it. He made it better. He made the script better, and he did the casting, he saw John Goodman. He said, "This guy is going to be a superstar." I've never seen anything like it. He said, from one session on this little teenage, you know, the hijinks comedy, he has one meeting with the guy, and he knows he just thinks the guy's fantastic.
John Goodman recently said on Howard how much he actually prepped for the role. And he based it on many coaches he had growing up. And the fact that I thought also Howard said it was also a film that he loved as well, I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah. It's got its place. And if Fox would have promoted it right and this and that, it would have a much bigger place. Like I say, it's never been on iTunes. I mean, for 20 years, you couldn't find it.
Well,
I don't know what they're doing what they were doing, but and then if you remake it, I don't know if that'll work. You know, I mean, so many of these movies are ruined in remakes.
I've never seen one improved ever.
I'm sorry.
I've never seen one improved. I've always seen them step down the remake. Have you seen any of these reboots that are better?
I can't think of it. I really can't. I mean, they ruined all the Italian movies, you know, and the French movies, and they, you know,
I go to Americano. So Longest Yard, it thought was lesser. I think Bad News Bears was lesser.
The Fly.
Zoolander.
The Fly.
Was The Fly better?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go.
But you mentioned if you wanted that they hadn't done a musical yet. Is that something that you've been pushing for, or you'd be interested in working
on?
Yes,
I'd love to do it. I think it'd be a perfect musical, and I could fix what the rape scene.
Next Thursday, I believe we have the president of Fox Movie Channel in studio, and also there's Jim Giannopoulos, who's the president of all Fox movies. I happen to date a Greek, and who's part of there is a Greek mafia in Hollywood, so I'm gonna have to kick some tires on this. I can't let it go. I love this movie. I really do.
No, I do too. It was my best experience in show business. And the story was the true story of my next door neighbor. I went to the University of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And my next door neighbor had that happen to him. He didn't get into any of the fraternities. And he started his own fraternity, and it was just a horrible fraternity. They'd lose 80-0 in football, and you know, their parties were dirty, but they had a ball, you know.
Did they videotape any sororities, or was that in your guys?
No. Well, they weren't into revenge. The revenge was, you know, was this group of nerds. Mm. So no, they didn't. They weren't bullied. So, I mean, I don't know if they were bullied. I mean,
I want to step away from Nerds, if I may, which I can't believe I'm saying, because it is one of my favorite films. But when I look at your resume, I'm blown away because you have a very diverse slate. Some of my favorite TV shows. Can you talk about your experience writing for The Odd Couple? You did the one episode.
Well, Gary Marshall was my manager.
Wow.
I was involved with a really good group of people, Gary Marshall being the best. One of my first jobs was on The Odd Couple. He'd pay me $5 a joke, and I would write, 10 or 20 clean and dirty jokes, and then Gary would read them, and if he liked some, then he'd mark them down. Then maybe there'd be 8 or 9 or something, and then I'd wait 6 hours, and at the end of the reading on the set, they'd show them to Tony Randall and
Jack Klugman, and
they'd look at him and go, oh, these are shit, and they'd throw them away, and just everyone would walk out, So that was my first experience working on a show, and Klugman and Randall were the consummate professionals.
Tell me about them on that show. It's one of my favorite shows.
It was brilliant. It was a brilliant show. Yeah.
Tell me about them. Speak to them.
Gary Marshall's brilliant. Gary Marshall, he's got to be one of the top TV guys ever.
Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley.
Norman Lear and Jim Brooks and of that time period.
That time. You know? And he's still directing.
He had 6 shows on the air at once.
And still directing today. But go back, speak to why were the, what you said, the consummate professionals were Klugman and Randall?
They knew what they were doing. They knew what they liked. They were very professional about it. They delivered. I mean, they were just the consummate professionals, the two of them.
Did they have fun making that series? Could you tell?
They did with each other. Yeah, that was a fun show. People had fun on that show. Some of the shows weren't so fun, but that.
Which
that
ones weren't fun?
The Laverne and Shirley was supposed to be a nightmare. I didn't work on it, but it was supposed to be really bad.
Happy Days was that Happy Days set? You also wrote
Happy Days was a blast. Happy Days was a blast.
Is that where you met Ted McGinley?
Yeah. Well, Ted being cast in Nerds was a surprise. I didn't say get Ted McGinley to play the part. They came up with him. And he is a sensational guy. He's just he's a great person, really sweet. He's very professional too, and very successful. He really had a great.
I mean, I think there's no coincidence that he worked so much because he probably is just that great a guy. You know what I mean? He's probably a great guy to have on
everyone
set.
Everyone loves him. Everyone loves him, and he's funny. He's funny as hell. He'll really just do stupid humor beautifully.
Tell me about the Partridge Family.
Partridge Family was that when I left Wisconsin, coming out to Hollywood, where my friend Alan Mandel helped me get into show business. The goal in my mind was to write for Partridge Family, and because again, I'm not good with reality, so it was whimsical. It was actually just a very easy show for me to write.
What do you mean you're not good with reality?
I don't do well with reality, and so I couldn't write, a real movie or a real show, or even deal with any reality,
real life situation. It needs to be a little fantastic.
Yeah, it's just everything's pretty ridiculous, and Partridge Family was just the perfect show for that, and it was just light and whimsical. And
did you work on set? Did you interact with the actors on that show as well?
Yeah, and that one we would, because it was really fun the way it was shot. I mean, it was very easy. Some of these shows are really hard to shoot, and that was really easy. So, they shot kind of from 9 to 5. I had to be there, and the scripts were done. They were shot like a movie, so the scripts were done before they shot them. And, on the multi-camera shows, you're up 3 nights a week, working until 4 in the morning, and not on a one camera film show. They're all, it was just really nice and reasonable. And it was a top 10 show. And I didn't realize what a big star David Cassidy was. He was a terrific guy. And,
young Danny Bonaducci. Do you remember working with him?
Yeah, he was hysterical. I loved him. He was my favorite. And Susan Day was, I was good friends with her. And Dale McCraven was great. He really kind of made that show. He was a terrific writer. I don't know if you've heard of him.
No, I haven't heard of him.
Oh, he was amazing. He's the one that made Partridge Family great. And then there was, he also did Mork and Mindy. And I think he did the Dick Van Dyke Show and everything. He was in with Gary Marshall in that group. And, there was just a tremendous Hollywood group around Gary Marshall with, you know, Penny Marshall and Rob Reiner and Albert Brooks. And, it was an amazing Nancy Shire and Chuck Shire. And, it was an amazing group of writers.
Are you in touch with anyone from those days of Hollywood the actors, you know?
I run into people from time to time, you know, some people. I mean, my rabbi or whatever, my biggest supporter was Brandon Tartikoff.
ABC, right? Or NBC, excuse me. Sorry.
Brandon Tartikoff was the greatest network executive ever. And I was very fortunate that he was my backer. So his first job in Hollywood was, I did a show called Quark, which was about a garbage ship in outer space. And it was created by Buck Henry. And so Brandon's first job in show business was being current programming on our show. So he hung out with us and he went to dailies and he loved the show and this and that. And a month and a half later, he was named the president of NBC. So I was friends with him and he ran the network, you know, and controlled $2 billion worth of money each year. And it was really phenomenal. I'm surprised you haven't heard of him.
Of course we have. No, I've heard of him. These kids probably haven't, but he was huge. In as far as the actors, do you stay in touch with some of the actors from that time period?
The actors?
Yeah, when you think
of... I was friends with Dudley Moore a little bit. Remember Dudley Moore?
Of course, from Arthur, yeah.
Yeah, I wrote a movie called The Truth About Swedes, and Dudley wanted to star in it, and Tuesday Weld was going to be in it, and I went through a whole thing with him, and he was... And then Dick Benjamin was the star of Quark.
Dick Benjamin, that one you got me on. I don't think... I'm a TV-aholic. I don't know Dick Benjamin. Let me see,
okay, he was a big star. He actually was a very successful director. He directed My Favorite Year for Mel Brooks.
Oh my God, amazing film!
Yeah,
really
yeah.
amazing. Based on
Dick,
what
Dick
Errol
was
Flynn,
a great
right?
director. He made a lot of films and a great guy, and a great actor. I mean, people loved him. He was in Goodbye Columbus.
Gotcha, and then Westworld. I see. Oh,
yeah.
Wow. You know, he's still working. Children's Hospital, which Henry Winkler does. And Ray Donovan. Oh, he's mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Okay. I know who this guy is. Oh, yeah. He's phenomenal.
Yeah, he's very famous. He's very, very famous. Or he was. You know, it's interesting. As you get old, you don't know the new stars. You know, so to me, all these, you know, he was a really big star. And the kids today probably wouldn't even know who he is.
So tell us about the Emmy you won on All in the Family. Was that where you got your Emmy?
Yes, it was Emmy. Well, the Emmy on the Family, it was my story idea. And I went into All in the Family and pitched the story idea. And basically, Norm and Lear said, we're going to buy this, but we're not going to let you write it. And I said, well, what do you mean you're not going to let me write it? And he said, well, you know, what do you know about menopause? And I said, well, my mother's going through menopause. And he said, well... we're going to have it. So they had this other guy write it. I don't know if I should say his name. Why not? Bert Stiler.
Okay.
And the script was no good. And then Don Nickel, who I think is one of the greatest writers in the history of television, wrote the script, and it was sensational. So I couldn't even argue with him.
This was for Edith's Problem?
Yes.
Got it.
Yes. And it won the Emmy, and I got a certificate, and... you know, I was 23, 24 years old.
Damn.
You know, so it was pretty neat.
That's what you get, a certificate?
You probably got the you probably got a trophy too, didn't you?
No, you don't get the trophy if you only get a story credit.
You still get the claim.
We should make you a fake trophy.
Yep.
Put it up anyway.
Well, you know, my dad used to gold plate the trophies, and he gave me one, so I had a fake one.
Oh, nice. My God. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And did you work with Carol O'Connor in anyone? Did you have any interaction with
him? No, I was friendly with Rob Reiner.
Damn.
And I used to play basketball with him.
And you're not in touch with him anymore?
Sometimes. I saw him a couple of years ago. I'm in Chicago now, so they're all
I know. So
I don't see a lot of the people. I see Gary Marshall, you know, every once I check in with him.
And he has another film coming out. Is it Mother's Day that Gary?
Yes.
It's incredible.
Well, Kevin, you speak about being in touch with him, but your last IMDb credit is 20 years ago now. Is there something else that you feel like you need the world to know, a story you need to tell, or do you think that we won't be hearing your words anytime soon?
Well, I'm writing novels and I write screenplays, so I know I'm still with hope to do something. And I'm really into these web series projects. But I quit the business pretty much when I was 50 years old. I just quit it. I was, you know, you're thrown out when you're 50, and you know you either are hot or you're not, and I couldn't go down one more hallway and tell one more vice president of a studio one more ridiculous idea. I just couldn't do it. So I just sold my house and I moved back to Chicago.
Are there web series you're working on now? I love that you're interested in them.
Yeah. Oh, you know, for the kids breaking into Hollywood, I think that's the way to do it. And so I'm a teacher now. I have, you know, a couple hundred students. And so I encourage them to make these web series. And, I love now that you can make these things with your phone. So I made a pilot. I have a Steve Zacharias videos on Vimeo. And I made a full-length 120-minute movie called A Nerd in the Woods, which is me driving around the country, going to all the most beautiful places in the country, and just talking into the camera myself, holding it myself. Not, you know, I love that you can just make movies with your phone.
So non-scripted? Yeah. You just were speaking off the cuff?
Yeah, non-scripted. But the editing is amazing too, because you edit it on iMovie. And you know, you can do a really good job with it, and I love it for the kids breaking in, because they don't need a production company, they don't need a studio, they don't need a manager, they don't need an agent. They can, you know, Workaholics became a series, Broad City became a series,
Sunny in Philadelphia,
Drunken History became a series. And my favorite one was High Maintenance, which is coming on HBO, I think, now, this year. Do you know High Maintenance?
Mm-mm.
Nope. But we will.
Take a look at it. Watch the episode called Matilda. It's amazing.
Cool.
It's very well written. And I know it was the first on-demand movie on Vimeo. I think it's going on HBO.
Love hearing that.
So this, to me, this is the way the kids should break in. And so we made a little on my Vimeo site. We made a 6-minute pilot about a student in college, you know, and we just improvised it and ad-libbed it and stuff like that. And then, you know, and then we reshoot it, or we rework it, or we do this, or we do that. I'm just encouraging people to make these things, you know, not just write them, but go and make them.
Go make them.
That must be gold to your ears, Kevin, because that's what you're saying.
I say that all
the time.
No, I say it all the time too. It's that's the great thing about this world. That is the great part of the world with the technology. And yeah, it wouldn't be the way it was for guys like you, you know, with spec scripts and all that.
Oh
stuff.
My God, we had nothing like this. We, you know, we had to write a script, and then you know, you had to know someone. I mean, you still have to know someone. But you know, and then they have to like your script, and then you have to get an opportunity, and then you have to write a good one when you get it, and then if you're lucky, you're in. And you know, I broke into show business without nepotism. I didn't know anyone. I had my friend from college, Alan Mandel, who was out there working on The Odd Couple. And I wrote a spec script, and then Gary Marshall read him and liked him, and then he signed me. So, you know, that was it. Nowadays, it's, you know, these kids, they love it. They're very talented, and it's just very hard to break in. But with the web series, they can really do it.
Steve Zacharias, thank you so much for calling in and sharing all this amazing information. And I'll be a fan of yours and this movie for many, many, many years to come.
And for being so honest with us.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And by the way, I'm going to get back in touch with you because I'm going to, you know, let me just knock on some doors and see, because I don't know. It shouldn't die. It's just such a big, I think you're right. I think it's musical. I think there's just other things to do with this. So
yeah, there's more things to do. I'm working on some of them. I'm actually working with a group now to do something like that. So, I think there are opportunities out there.
Please keep us posted.
I will do.
Nice talking to you. And we can get, so it's Steve Zacharias on Vimeo. If we go to Vimeo, we can find your stuff.
Yeah, if you Googled Steve Zacharias videos on Vimeo,
we'll be able
you'd get to them.
And you on social media? Do you do any of that stuff? Twitter or anything?
No, my son does it all for me and pretends like he's me because I can't do it, and just embarrasses me and does terrible things.
Typical nerd. Yeah.
At least you're honest. Is it at Steve Zacharias?
He's John Zacharias is my son, and he is a tremendous.
But what is
optimizer?
What's your handle though? Your Twitter handle.
I don't know.
I don't even know
what
I will find out. These millennials will find out. I think, you know, my advice is you should talk to your son. You need some kind of Revenge of the Nerds handle. Something that says Revenge of the Nerds.
I think he's done that.
He probably has.
I think he's done all kinds of stuff.
All right, we're going to find out. We'll do our due diligence. And Steve, hopefully we'll stay in touch. And once again, thank you so much for coming on tomorrow's show. All right. We're going to go to a quick commercial break. We'll come back. We're going to decompress a little bit from this commercial. We are going to, there's an update on the man curtain. I'm having health issues with my 16-year-old oldest girl. Our own Adrian, Boston Strong, will give you an update on her in the marathon today. And we were featured, tomorrow's show was featured in a couple of major news outlets, which was pretty cool. Anyway, we're going to go out in Revenge of the Nerds. We will be back, as we say in Boston, shortly.
Hey there, good buddies. My handle's Wooly Bear. I'm a truck driving man, but I'm not that old school kind of truck driving man, no. I like to listen to podcasts while I'm driving through these great United States of ours. And my favorite podcasts in the world are from AfterBuzz TV. And why? Because AfterBuzz TV is like a post-game wrap-up show for all your favorite TV shows, like Jersey Shore, Dancing with the Stars, Mad Men, and a whole truckload more. I like listening to my Gossip Girl podcast, catching up with all my fellow fans and getting all the latest news and gossip. You know, I got some strong opinions. And AfterBuzz TV lets me share those opinions with thousands of other listeners. Woo-wee, what a feeling. I used to doze off on those lonely stretches of road. And don't worry, I got the cruise control. But now I'm wide awake and listening to all the AfterBuzz TV goodness. Check them out. Give them a holler. And tell them the old Wooly Bear sent you. AfterBuzz TV.
Hi, I was once like you. A lazy, angry loner whose only joy was watching TV and surfing the net. And, like you, after I'd see one of my favorite TV shows, I'd be so excited and have so many questions that I'd actually have to talk to my douchebag coworkers about it at the water cooler. Then I discovered AfterBuzzTV.com. AfterBuzz TV produces after-show webcasts and podcasts for TV series of all kinds. like post-game wrap-up shows for all your favorite TV shows. AfterBuzz TV hosts are industry insiders who break down episodes of shows, take calls from fans, and interview cast and crew from each series, with over 60 different after shows, from Boardwalk Empire to American Idol to Vampire Diaries to Real Housewives and more. Now, after a night of TV, I can ignore my stupid coworkers, who I hate, and go straight to my desk and watch or listen to all my favorite AfterBuzz TV after shows and have all the TV fan interaction I need. Thank you, AfterBuzz TV.
AfterBuzz TV, what do you want to buzz about?
Hello world, hear the song that we're singing. Oh, yeah. I'm really surprised. This has to be Christian Blatt who picked this. This is no way Jared at 32.
I'm going to admit that this one was all me. Yeah.
Nice. Can we just enjoy it for a little bit?
What a simpler time.
Oh, by the way. Lauren, you would crush this song.
I love this song.
Do you know the song?
Yeah, I used to watch Partridge Family on Nick at Night.
Can you sing with me?
Yeah, when it gets to the chorus.
Here we go. Traveling along is a song that we're singing.
Come on, get happy.
A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing.
Come on, get happy.
We'll make you happy.
Happy.
Hey, you know what's funny? He, very underrated voice by Keith Partridge. David Cassidy.
Yeah.
He really did. This Come On, Get Happy, and then I'm trying to think the other big... What was the other big hit, Christian, that they... I mean, they
I Think
several.
I Love You, but what am I so afraid of?
That song is so good.
Lauren would crush both of those.
Yeah, Lauren, like, let's go. Let's bring some...
I should have anticipated this night and had a cover.
No, I'm just saying, in general, like, when you do your shows, like, just throw the curve.
That's really smart. I mean, Kev, with the innovative ideas, you always have them.
You need Captain Lou.
I do.
Ba, 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 ba,
it's a very
ba,
sexy build in this song. It's like creepy sexy. I'm
sleeping and riding in the middle of a good dream. So, Roxy, you're watching the video. Do you think this guy's hot?
Not my type, Kev.
Lauren?
I think there's something about him.
He's doing it for
He's
me
not
right
afraid.
Now.
Oh, look at those shoulder movements.
Oh, I'm ready to go gay.
So...
you know, David Cassidy performed at my high school 4th of July party back in the day.
That doesn't sound like a good thing.
We were screaming, David, please sign our taint from the crowd, and he did not appreciate it.
He takes himself very seriously.
Is the taint the area between your balls and your penis?
Yes, it's a fleshy fun bridge.
Yes.
Why did you want him to sign your taint?
We just wanted to get his attention, you know? We felt that was the best way to do so.
But so what am I so afraid of? I'm afraid that I'm unsure of a love there is no cure for. Look at that look.
I think I love you. Isn't that what life is made of?
He asked him to sign his fucking taint. Are we just gonna like move on from that?
I mean, it's fucking Jared. What part of that surprises you?
Just like
that Danny Parker.
Here we go, Lauren. I'm just dying in the bridge. I'm swimming.
Listen. What is this instrument even? What a magical, magical instrument right here.
Here's Susan Dave pretending to sing, and Shirley Jones actually doing some real singing. She was the only one who sang, the mother.
It's him flicking his taint.
I don't know what I'm up against. I don't know what it's all about.
Look at his shiny hair. I think he's been taking a note out of Pantene Katie's book.
Yeah.
So is Pantene Katie, is she out running errands?
No, she's right here.
Pantene Katie, what do you have to say about David Cassidy?
I'm liking it. Very happy song. And the close-up.
And what do you think about him?
He's nice looking.
You'd be great on his arm. I think Pantene Katie and David Cassidy would really rock it.
Kevin, doesn't he look like a woman a bit, though? Like, in a good way.
I guess in a good way, yeah. I guess in a good
way. He's very feminine looking.
Anyway, we're playing this because Steve Zacharias, this was the show that he wrote for.
One of many.
I love his Rocky Dennis haircut.
It's funny. I'm sure if he could go... I wonder if he could go back in time. So David Cassidy, this got so out of control for him that he just divorced himself from it. He wanted to real... You know, he went through this... thing where he wanted to do more serious acting, and he wanted to do more rock and roll that was more him. He thought this was bubblegum.
Is this the only song of his that I would know?
Cherish. You probably could pull up Cherish. Pull up David Cassidy, Cherish, and I bet you know that one as well. But, you know, it was also the beginning of stardom, you know, child stardom, teen stardom. We didn't really know how to do it. So a lot of these guys, it started in the 50s, and the 60s, and even in the 70s, we still didn't really know how to manage it yet. Notice how we can manage Bieber out of his teen years and into his formative years, and how we can manage...
That's one of them, though, Kev. Think about the Lohans, the Amanda Bynes.
Well, so females. You're dealing with female. That's a different beast.
Okay.
They're more than a teen star. It's a female. That's a female issue. And they disintegrated, but in terms of those
like
two...
Nick Carters and the... Or I guess Aaron
but
Carter.
But they've kind of figured out some stuff, but think of, you know, some of the other people. Even think of the New Kids on the Block.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a huge draw.
Yeah.
Performing-wise.
But aren't the Spice Girls, too, or they do they not count because they're older when they made it?
In terms of what did they mean? I think...
Because they're a huge draw, too. Like, people would go out in droves to see them.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like,
that's his point.
We know how to manage it today.
Oh, I see. Okay.
As managers, as people in the business, you know, no one knew how to transition these guys. Nobody knew, you know, nobody knew how to do it. So, you know, you wonder if he regrets... You know, he was massive, and then someone died at one of his concerts, was like trampled or something, and he was just like, I'm done, I'm out, I'm sick of the bubblegum music, I want to do real rock and roll, I want to do serious acting. And,
Still didn't sign my taint.
He didn't
What about Macaulay Culkin?
Fucking Jared.
We didn't know how to fucking manage him.
I think he's, you know what it is with him? I think he's very introverted, and, I've sat next to him at different events and things like that. I just think he's had enough.
Okay.
You know, that's internal.
Well, it really is a lot more women, Kev, than men that we haven't figured out exactly how to manage being
a
child.
They have to come to the captain. They got to come to Captain Lou. I'll figure it out for them.
Why is that? Is it more difficult time for women at that age than men? Maybe?
No, it's just difficult. The women's just really hard on you. The business is really just hard on you guys, period. It always has been. You know, and it always will be because they're always about the next thing. Anyway, Steve Zacharias, very interesting.
Yeah, I was really impressed, actually, with how much he owned up to everything, Kev. Like, yes, that was rape.
Yes, it was wrong. Yeah, I guess it was. I don't know.
Didn't you expect him to kind of like come back at us a little bit? I thought I was going to be a little feisty and he was going to be like, that is not what happened. But he was like, yeah.
Hey, just well-adjusted, I guess. I don't know. What'd you guys think of the booth?
I love the angle. Okay. I love the angle of the video.
The camera angle.
Yeah, the camera angle. Like, yeah, when we called him pre-show, he had some oatmeal cookies. We had a nice conversation, and he just wanted to stay in the bed. And we're like, let's stay there. Why not? So I like
he asked. He said, can I stay laying like this?
Yeah,
he literally did. He said he'd share his oatmeal cookies with us, which I'm upset about because we did not receive any via the Skype broadcast. But I thought he was really cool, really open, and just honest. And I think any guy who would like lay on the bed like that and videotape himself, I'm into him for that reason.
You know what I'm going to do? Shout out to Gilbert Gottfried's podcast. Is it Amazing Colossal?
The Amazing Colossal podcast, yes.
Yeah, and I think that he needs to go on that podcast because I think Gilbert and his partner on the show would pull it's about Hollywood history. It's like just vintage
I guarantee
TV.
They'd spend 40 minutes on Love American Style.
Just on that alone.
And it would be fascinating.
Yeah. I thought it was great. I'm still stunned by all of your reactions to the movie, but again, that's why I probably just shouldn't be around.
He said the magic number.
Jerry said at 50, you're out of Hollywood, so that's me. When I hit 50, I it's probably time to go too.
It made me realize I've only got 10 years. So
yep,
I'm going to really
out.
Have to capitalize
done.
On these next, this next day.
You know that's not fucking true.
I don't know. Who knows anymore?
He wants to hang with us, though. We talked during the break, and he said that he's going to be in town in May in L.A., and I said, hey, we got a nice studio. We got some cocktails. Because he said he hasn't been on radio in L.A. in like 20 years. I'm like, it's changed. The game has changed.
Yeah.
Kevin is changing the game.
No, and you know what? And we could have madness. I mean, we've already had tall people tosses.
Yeah.
We've had entrances into gay bars. We'll come up with something.
What is he coming out here in May for?
Someone's going to have to get hazed or something. I don't know.
There's going to have to be some nerd-related press.
Yeah, I think so. By the way, Curtis Armstrong, who played Booger, he comes into AfterBuzz a lot. He's got a good relationship at AfterBuzz. In fact, I think he hosts a show over there.
Oh, really?
Doesn't he with Yao?
Oh.
I think he does. But anyway, let's
yeah,
keep the dialogue going with this. Because, that was, to me, that was really cool. So Adrian, from what I understand, she ran her marathon.
She did. She crossed that finish line. She was one of two Boston Marathon bombing survivors to cross the finish line this year.
Man, I wish I were there.
Me too, Kev. That's all I've been thinking all fucking day. My dad's down there and I'm sending me pictures and shit.
Just, can we, you know what? Will you guys try to get in touch with her now? I mean, I'm sure she's partying right now,
sure.
And rightfully so. But let's see if we can try to get her. Oh, there she is. God love her.
Or she's passed out because she ran a frickin' marathon.
No,
today.
Adrenaline. No, she's Boston. She's got dragon's blood like me.
Oh, my God.
She was a good partier, too. She was drinking with us. She's good to hang with.
Yeah, Boston, typical Boston chick.
I have to tell you that when I saw this picture today, Kevin, I just started crying.
I know, I know.
Hysterically, like.
Oh, my God. Jesus.
How fucking cool is that?
Oh, and she's limping. Go ahead, girl. Damn it. You see, and I have such issues in my brain because I'm like emotional and I'm crying for her and then I get violent.
I know.
No, and then I get violent and I don't want good things for the guy in jail.
It's like what you asked her, like how do you decide when you wake up in the morning?
It's, yeah, I don't know. And I didn't even go through it, so I can't imagine. She said, how would you like to be me? But how amazing. That is just awesome. Let's try it. See what we can do to get in touch. I just love to hear from her, and I so wish we were there.
It also got to make, it makes me feel like a piece of shit. I'm like, okay, there's nothing, I'm not an amputee, and I didn't go through this, and I couldn't run a marathon to save my fucking life. Get your shit together, Roxy. Look at her. Look at how fucking amazing.
I think many of us would be very surprised at how much we can endure. That's why I have no problem pushing any of you guys. I have no problem pushing you because you do have it in you to do that. You just don't know it. You know, you absolutely have that fight in you. But it has to be woken up in all of us.
Oh, my God.
You know?
Look at our whole team going like
that. That's amazing.
Too.
God, good for them. This is just why, God, I love Boston. Anyway, I'm sure we'll be hearing from her.
Curious what her social media looks like today.
I'm hoping it's blowing up.
Yeah, I hope so, too.
And I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
This always gets you pumped up.
It really does.
It's good for St. Patty's Day, too. You know, we had that good party with this.
Yep. I wish we had Adrian. She was fun, too.
Oh, my God. Yeah, she was drinking with us on Thirsty Thursday.
She was hashtag I'm with Ian. That was before, Pantene Katie. That was before Ian was labeled a bystander. That day, Ian was taking up for the terrorists and their rights, their thoughts and feelings.
He felt that the terrorists were being bullied, and he stepped in to take charge.
Yeah, yeah. He was happy to step in for the terrorists.
Of course.
But God forbid, poor little Pantene Katie is under terrible attack and just sat there leaning back in his chair.
Oh,
what's that, honey?
I forgot that I saw that Tom Brady was raving about Adrian today all over the place earlier.
Sure.
Like, what is cooler as a fucking Bostonian than to have Tom Brady mention your name out of his mouth? But then again, I'm talking to somebody who's been flown by Brady to go sit in his box over at Gillette. So.
But, you know what it is about him, though? When you see him on the sidelines, he's so competitive and so passionate that I don't think it's just, oh, yeah, I'll send her a nice well wish. You can see when he gets so angry and focused, and I feel like he feels like that too, for her, which all of us do. It's funny. Maria had her best friend, Alyssa, in town this weekend.
Karen. Alyssa was here.
Alyssa was here. You'll love what they talked about. Talking about the TV show The Affair. And how,
oh, no, Kev, don't fucking do it.
And how excited. Alyssa was just saying how excited she was for it to come back. And Alyssa apparently had said to Maria, she's watching the Tomorrow Show, she likes the show, and she said to Maria, oh, I thought I thought Roxy, his co-host, I was sure that was his mistress. It's not?
No, she didn't fucking say
she
that.
She said that.
Kevin.
And I just started cracking up and telling her, Isaac, we call her Allison. Roxy's Allison in my life. So
it's a joke, people. It's a joke.
It is a joke. It's a joke.
Kevin, you're going to get us in fucking trouble.
No, it's such a, it is like on many, many souls of people I care about. Yeah, no, it is. But it's just that funny that
I can't believe she said that.
She brought up, she's like, no, I was sure. That was. I just didn't want to say anything to Marie. And then I almost turned the guns on her and said, well, what kind of friend are you if you suspected that?
Yeah.
You didn't say anything all these years.
You didn't say that, though?
No, because I didn't want to indulge. I didn't
want
to go down the hole.
Yeah, because you know who would have done that? A guilty person.
Right.
Guilty people fight back.
I just was laughing. I just thought it was really funny that she was convinced of it.
Kevin, you're going to make her hate me so bad.
But we have Karen... But Karen, believe me, would have. I mean, it's been 6 years, Roxy. Don't you think she would have had a say, you know, all these years later? It's because it's not true. She knows. I mean, by the way, you're dealing with a reporter who knows everything.
And somebody who probably feels threatened by nothing because she's a 12. Like
Karen!
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's a 12 because a lot of 12s get insecure. No, I think it's the fact that it's the dragon's blood. And the Greeks.
What do you mean 12s get insecure?
I see a lot of beautiful women that are just so insecure.
It's because they're too attached to their looks and they know it's fleeting.
Maybe.
Well,
divas.
She's not one of them, so
no,
lucky for me.
I mean, I there's members of Maria's family, and it's not that it's they have that her last name or they're related. It's just I happen to see it in the Greek community. There's other communities I see it in too, but they are just, you know, they're so, their shit don't stink.
Mm.
So I'd say Maria's like that because she knows she has flaws in other areas, but it's just not something she ever sweats, you know? So she just doesn't sweat that. She never did.
Yeah,
she
I think
never
you,
did.
You both
You know
do
who
it.
Else was like that?
Who?
Carmen Electra.
Really?
Just never sweated other... She admired the beauty of other women, but never sweated it.
I love her.
Yeah,
I've run into her a few times at Sirius, and she's so sweet and so funny. Like, just doesn't
she
take
is.
Herself seriously at
no.
all.
She's
and she
people.
Loves you too, Kev. She said you really helped her in the beginning of her career because when she was on Singled Out, she was really scared, but you always encouraged her to go for it and, you know, just like try crazy things. Like, she said you made her do a snake walk or something, or like a, what's that called? Like the worm. And she said, like, just
remember.
Having to get out of her body like that set her up and made her, like, capable
That's
of doing
amazing
anything.
She
in
said
her
that.
Career.
I didn't,
yeah, she said
I didn't
that
know
to
that
me.
She remembered. Yeah. I mean, I just saw a girl that was, I'd never seen anything as beautiful in my life, you know, that back when I had met her, it was almost like she just wasn't even real. But was fun, down to earth, and just always wanted to have a good time. And was also a professional. But I knew that, you know, acting, comedy, all that stuff was new to her.
Mm-hmm.
But I also
this
knew
is back in the Singled Out.
Back
days.
In Singled Out, but I knew she was replacing Jenny, and so it was a layup. You know, you're playing with the house's money. You know, whoever came into that role was going to succeed to some degree. And I thought that.
Why do you say that?
Well, because I was there. I'm not to be like that, but it was so big. It was at a time when there was only 10, 7 or 8 channels. It wasn't the world we live in today. Like, Jenny was so big that you were going to get something out of it.
Yeah, but
so
don't
Roxy,
you think replacing her could be make it worse, like harder?
You'd still be instantly famous, and you know you can always do something with fame.
Okay.
So I was looking at it that way. Like, you couldn't lose. But I also knew you were going from blonde to brunette. You were going from Jenny, who was very much in a physical comedy, but you're Carmen, who is an unbelievable dancer. So it was the perfect transition. It was the perfect person to go to. And I remember fighting with MTV because they wanted to bring in comedians. And I remember one of the executives saying, we want a Janine Garofalo type.
Mm.
Do you guys know Janine Garofalo? You know, extremely talented person. But I just remember being at that time, I was young, drunk. But I still knew better. Like, how do you replace someone as sexy as Jenny with a comedian? Someone who's just known for comedy.
Did they want her because of the Daria fame?
I think it was, yeah, it was probably Daria, and you know, came from a good place, probably, you know, women's rights or, you know, whatever. Let's get. But what happens is you were setting yourself up to fail.
Mm-hmm. You said that?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, you know, I learned a lesson, too. Sometimes, you know, it's better, one of the better ways to, when you're pitching to an executive, one of the better ways to appeal to them is to appeal to their fears. So I remember one of the things we said was, do you want to be the person that does something totally different? Let's go over it. You do something totally different. Jenny's so big that every week there's a Jenny meter in Entertainment Weekly. That's how big Jenny was at the time. So whoever you bring in, it's not going to be able to beat that. Let's just face it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you try to reinvent the wheel and bring in something totally different, it could blow up in your face huge. If you bring in somebody that is equal to Jenny or keeps the sexiness, the funness, the, you know, all these young 13-year-old boys who that was the core audience for the show are going to love or fall in love with, even if it doesn't succeed up to Jenny, you're not going to be attacked as an executive. But if you bring in something totally different and it fails, and chances are very good it's going to, because you can't live up to what Jenny was doing, it's going to be on you.
How did you figure out how to phrase it like that?
It just came from my heart. I my stuff, unfortunately, it's either just comes from stuff that that just comes internal. I'm not a showbiz kid, and I didn't have parents in big business who could teach me that stuff. But I just knew I just was such a TV fan. I was such a student of television, and since I was a little kid, and I just knew. I'm like, you know, but doesn't that make sense?
Yeah.
If you have a beautiful kids watching for that beautiful girl every week, right?
Yeah.
Why would now you give him someone who's not as beautiful or not known for sexy or beauty, and now is this comedian? The train stops.
Kev, I went back and watched a bunch of old episodes of this. I've been doing it over the last couple months, and I
bet
think
you I remember this blonde girl's name. I bet you I remember her
really?
Name.
Brains, date style. Hey, Jenny McCarthy, is everybody signed in over there in your area where there's people
Shut
with
up,
guys
talking.
And hats? Thank you. Listen,
Jenny would like smack these kids so hard.
Did you know that?
You're psycho.
I know. And
Kevin, do you like working with her?
Loved. Loved.
I had a poster of her on my wall as a kid, so it worked.
Now you're really psycho.
Yep.
I think the show totally holds up. Like the zaniness.
Are you ready to meet your leader?
Have you watched any episodes, Kevin,
no,
recently?
No.
You haven't gone back at
no,
all?
No, it's hard. It's hard to watch them.
She was so hot, though. She was it.
Who, Jenny?
Yeah.
Oh, gorgeous. Still is.
Yeah,
and she's still
Carmen
this warm.
Too.
Right.
Oh, let's start with package.
I guess that's the point.
And by the way, Chris, nobody faster and nobody with a reference with material in his brain, like the stuff he would pull out.
Yeah, you could easily get sucked in and watch these on YouTube.
Oh my
now.
God,
it's great.
That's what I did, Jared. They're so fucking good.
You know, we should see. I wonder how young people would be watching. Like, I wonder how the younger generation would be watching this.
Yeah.
But I still think there's something with 100 single kids on a stage. Just, you know, it's just looking at that is enough eye candy. You would think.
I mean,
they've tried to bring it back 100 times, but they're never really able to do it.
It's almost like a live dating app. Like if you're willing to fucking go on all these Bumble things.
Kevin, I'd like to share with you a comment from the chat roll. We did not ban Ian from the chat roll, so he is there. He wanted to make sure you understood that Janine Garofalo is beautiful.
Okay, Ian. Thank you, Ian. Oh, boy,
and I don't think he means just on the inside, because that's not important to him.
Oh, boy, Ian.
I do think she's cute in a nerdy
kind
of way.
No, she is. Absolutely. It's just that you don't replace Jenny McCarthy with Janine Garofalo.
Yeah.
You know, you just don't. And by the way, it wasn't Janine Garofalo. It was a Janine Garofalo type. But still, it's like, duh. You know, that's what sometimes. Listen, Thursday night, I'm going to tease. We're going to have Chuck Safler in. He's the president of the Fox Movie Channel. He's vice president of the Fox of FX Networks, which I believe is the, one, is the greatest channel right now in terms of their diverse slate.
I'm with you.
He's a Boston guy. Chuck's a Boston guy, and he's been a great mentor and friend.
We didn't even talk about the end of the American Crime Story.
Right, which we'll save for to talk with him about it. But, you know, it's great when you meet people like Chuck because you go, okay, now I get it. This guy's far smarter than me, which he should be, than me, the fan. But then for every one of Chuck, there's 10 of the other executives that you're like, how do you have a job?
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying anything that other people don't know. I mean, I see it all the time. I'm befuddled by the decisions. I'm befuddled. I'm like, what?
Bunch of old white dudes thinking they know what's
you know
hip.
What? It's not that simple. No, because it's been all colors and orientations that I've seen that have been dumb. No, I think it's more that because they get into the business for different reasons. Maybe they have the better grades. Maybe they have more connections. Or, you know, it's not because they really have an instinct for storytelling and what sells. And I think if you are a good TV person should be able to do business in almost any other place. Good TV person should be decent at opening a restaurant, should be decent at opening, doing a clothing line. You should just know what people like and what they don't like and what, you have to know that stuff. And a lot of them that I know don't, and they don't because, you know, when you come out of an Ivy League school and, you know, you've had so much privilege your whole life and, you know, it's not been your passion.
Is it more that they don't know or they're just not very hands-on with it? It's like, okay, they know, but they just don't want to put in the work because at that point they all
No,
have
I don't
the
think
position.
They know. They don't think they know. You have to have an instinct, Rox, for what people like. You have to have an instinct for what people want to see, what they want to buy. And where does that come from? It comes from being around people. I know me. Marie makes fun of me, but I will. I try very hard to always stop at a McDonald's. To, if I can get into a Target to pick something up, I do it. Home Depot.
You guys always go to the mall. It's one of my favorite things.
Always. And because I'm watching what's selling, what's working. Even when I go into a Verizon, what color paint are they using?
On the walls?
Yeah, absolutely.
More so than what color the phones are?
Those too. I want to see all of it. But, you know, this is a... On a side note, these companies are spending billions on all this marketing that you can get for free if you open your eyes and you watch. But I'm watching for that stuff. But I also know the people who are super successful, they're always watching. They're watching the trends. What are people into? You know, and you should have that ability to say, you know what? The Housewives, not for me. But you know what? I see where people, there is an audience that would like this.
Yeah.
So, it's just that. And the great executives see that. And then the ones who aren't, you know, kind of just get by and fail upward and, you know, do what they do. And it's tragic because I think I see a lot of artists who actually have the ability. In fact, someone was telling me recently, they were saying that more artists later in their career should transition into the executive roles because they know a little bit more about storytelling in the process.
I think that does happen a lot, though.
No, I mean, not in the executive roles. Like, they'll become producers.
Or directors, but not as
much. But you're still
your
storyteller. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, doing what Chuck does and stuff. I mean, I know a lot of the artists are too flaky, too, to really, you know, be businessmen at the end of the day. But, yeah. Chuck, I'm excited to talk to Chuck on Thursday. And you guys have your questions ready even about the business. And the fact that he's still doing it at the level he's doing it at is, yes, to me, just has me in awe.
And that's actually a week from Thursday. That'll be next Thursday.
I am so sorry.
That's all right.
This Thursday is John Taffer, my other friend and mentor. And again, a guy that knows, you know, like John's a guy that just knows. He knows and he's always looking for trends and human behavior and what, you know.
So just to clarify, this coming Thursday, we've got John Taffer. And then on Monday, we've got Amy Garcia. And then the following Thursday, we've got Chuck.
Amy Garcia from Rush Hour. And I know from a lot of other things. She's a real cool girl.
I believe I know her from Dexter.
But yes, she's been all
yes.
over the place.
And she's a lot of fun. But yeah, singled out. Yeah, it's always hard to watch. Still hard to, sorry. I, you know, so that's the most I've seen in years. It's tough because that was...
painful, like, yeah. Or it's hard just because
because
you're taking your own work.
No, it was just fun. It was just a very fun time. I didn't care much about anything. I was nicely anesthetized with alcohol. And, you know, I regret that business-wise, but at the same time, you look back like, wow, it was just, imagine going to work. I mean, Jared at 32, imagine going to work every day and seeing 100 single girls on a stage and Carmen or Jenny.
That would be incredible, Kevin.
That was a lot of fun.
A little distracting in a good way.
But also working with Hardwick, too, was awesome.
And you're also downplaying, like you're pretending it's more about the celebrities, but Kevin, writing is in your bones, in your blood, and that's what's fun about it.
We did a lot of sketches and we did short films, and like I said, Chris and Jenny and Carmen, you got to improv with them, which
right.
was fun. I'm really glad that Carmen said that, though. It always makes you feel good, because I remember being Captain Lou Albano with her and being like, no, you can do this. You got this. You're going to be amazing. You're going to be a big star. It's on. No blinking.
And she didn't have any incentive to say that, because I just said, oh, yeah, Maria, you know her fiancé, Kevin. That's all I said.
Wow.
And that's what prompted her to go out and say how much what you did meant to her.
That's fucking awesome.
You millennials ruined my night because of Revenge of the Nerds. But, Lauren, thank you, because that just made my night.
We bullied you a little bit.
You did. Yeah. We had a man curtain fail. Yeah.
Oh, no, Kev.
Yes, yeah, it was on me, and it was on me.
Wait, like it fell down?
No. I have to be honest with you guys. By like 4 in the morning, I was a little lonely.
So you moved it?
No, yeah, I did move it, but I was like, I don't know. This doesn't feel so good. I don't know. Just saying. Just throwing it out there.
All right, well, that's why it's easy to take down in 4 seconds. When you don't want it up anymore, it goes down, Kev. That's not a fail.
I guess at some point we probably should cover Roxy, our relationship and how we met, that so we can dispel any. I know Sam Roberts show, SiriusXM, Sam and Kathy podcast. I know he's always in shock over our relationship.
Yeah.
He's and confused. But anyway,
if we're going to start calling me Allison, I guess we should back it up a little
Allison,
bit.
Allison, you're the best thing that ever happened to me.
Oh.
Every time that poor prick says that, I'm like, I think of like his life has done nothing but spiral.
Oh, no, I'm not your
anyway,
Allison.
Anyway, so we've got John Taffer on Thursday, you guys, as we take it out here. Say a prayer for my little baby. She's fighting, hopefully.
That's his dog.
Total kidney disease. Hopefully it's not kidney failure. I've been up with her every single night. Subcutaneous fluids being put in, and fingers crossed. I'm not ready to God. I don't want to say goodbye to her. Okay, at Roxy Stryer, at Gilkishan Radio, at Blatcast, at Lauren LaGrasso. Is it at Katie Campbell?
With three E's.
Yes, at Katie with three E's Campbell.
You know what? Okay, we're going to talk about that one.
We're going to have to lose a couple E's.
We're going to talk about that.
And
about
she has a different Instagram one, too. It's confusing, Katie.
Katie.
I always mess her up.
You know what? I've asked people before if I should change it. All the fans tell me no.
Okay.
They're lying to you, Katie. They're lying.
All right, you guys, and Ian Kaiser.
Ugh. And at Undergaro.
At Undergaro, you guys. And please, thank you for everything tonight. Make it or better tomorrow.
Thanks for tuning in to The Tomorrow Show with Kevin Undergaro. For guest bookings, questions, or comments, you can email us at info@thetomorrowshow.com. Be sure to follow us on social media and tell a friend about the show. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, your voice of tomorrow, wishing you a better one.